Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. It's Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Oh, my dear Kelly, you got your chocolate today.
You're the best. You're feeding my addiction, and I love it.
But you said you've already had some this morning?
Please, I had probably half a bar already. I'm not even kidding. I know. I think I have a little problem. But thank you so much. You're so sweet, and I'm not telling my children. Like, I'm literally going
to... No, they're not allowed to... I don't buy that chocolate for them to get their
absolutely
hands on.
Absolutely, yes.
Right? They can read now.
Well, you got to fight for London, though.
Even one can read, right? Does he follow rules? No.
No, exactly. Speaking of, this is really funny. We went to the Discovery Cube on Sunday, and he brought this girl that loves him. He could really kind of care less. For those of you who are listening, my son is five.
They have food.
Right, that is true. That could be the way to his heart.
Your best friend.
But she loves him. And we're in the ride on the way back, and I said to her, I said, Estella, what do you like about London? Just curious, Mom wants to know. She goes, he's sweet, he's handsome, he's so cute, and I want to marry him.
Oh my gosh.
And he's like, whatever. He's like, you're annoying me.
And he said that?
Later on, they were like an old married couple.
Oh my gosh.
It was really cute.
That
so we had a good
hysterical
time. It was really funny.
All
yeah
okay on the home front?
Things seem to be okay. Getting slightly better, although I'm kind of like scared to say it. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's not as crazy. Still crazy.
Okay.
Probably, you know, a little bit.
And Moose?
Oh, Moose. We haven't heard anything. He's just, we'll see. It looks like it might be this Cushing's disease or whatever. But, you know, it's potentially treatable as far as like the symptoms, because he just goes to the bathroom at night. He walks around. He does this like circle thing. It's like having a newborn again. You know, I know you get it. Exactly. So I'm taking it as it comes. I'm not getting too, you know, we'll wait and see.
All right. Well,
so
keep
thank
us
you
posted. Prowler yes had his third major chemo thing.
Okay.
Yesterday.
How did it go?
Vet is very happy with his progress. He had very few pukes this last week.
Good.
And he's eating, he's feisty, he's happy, you know, so he's looking like it could go. We'll see.
Oh my God, what a chance.
We'll know in
that
3 weeks.
Guy is beyond.
Yes. Yes. Oh. Well, anyway, those are the sad parts of life, but could be very happy.
Yeah.
As we
exactly
hope, right?
Yeah.
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 So any other crazy stories? I'm
trying to think what else. Went to Malibu, which was awesome. I haven't been there. Like, it's so funny. You know, when you live in California, you don't do all the things that you, like, really want to do ever. And so that was awesome. Did the waterfall hike, which was amazing.
You got to tell me where that is.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. Why?
Shut your mouth. I know something about California you don't.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
All right. You'll give me details later.
How yeah. Exciting. Oh, it's so beautiful. I mean, it's great. It was hot as hell, but it was so worth it. It was great. And then I went to Neptune's Nest or whatever.
Yes.
Got some like fish tacos and saw Reggie Miller, basketball player. Typical LA day, you know, normal.
Perfect.
So it was a good weekend. Yeah. What about you?
I had a super treat, like a super uber treat. I have newfound cousins from out of the woodwork that I had no idea who found my sister on Ancestry.com.
No.
Yes. So they all the way back to my father's sister. No, my father's father. So my grandfather, who I never met because they were all gone in the Holocaust. And my second cousin's grandmother, they were brother and sister. So my dad had a first cousin I never knew about.
Wow.
And then now they have their siblings. So I met my second cousin. one of her sons, amazing. So all the way they had reconnected. They got here before the war, but they were in Buenos Aires.
Uh-huh.
And somehow my father ended up there finding his cousin after he was released and crazy
shit.
But amazing.
They live in California?
She lives in Miami.
Okay.
But her sons live close by. And it's like beautiful. They're amazing. They're wonderful. They're charming. Do you know where they wanted to go to meet?
Where?
Brent's Deli. Like, okay.
That's such like the Jewish, like the typical, like, come on. You know,
Brent's
I love
Deli
it. I love it.
I was willing to, you know, drive closer because they were staying in Echo Park. Drive.
Yeah.
Meet you. Yep. Anyway.
That's
so
great.
Very exciting. More to unfold about that as I meet all these new
that's
lovely
awesome
people.
I love Ancestry.com.
Like
I've gotten connections
family
too. Yeah.
Always thought I had the smallest family on the planet. Well, no. Apparently not, because they have sisters and brothers and grandkids and this, so all of a sudden, you know, the United States is going to be a great place to visit all over the country.
Right, that's beautiful.
All right.
Now, so last week.
Special treats today. Yes. So last week, go ahead.
Yes, last week we had Jan Mundo, and she talked about, it was really cool. She talked about how to prevent headaches and basically, that's pretty much all, you know, what she talked about, which was fascinating because I know my brother suffered from migraines and things like that. So her book is The Headache Healer's Handbook, and she was great. If you have issues with headaches and or know somebody who does, it was a really great show to listen to.
And so holistic, which is really awesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A-okay. All right, so today we have two amazing, lovely ladies in studio with me from the organization Children Mending Hearts. First, we have Dr. Linda Duray. Duray. Sorry, it's got the little thing at the
accent.
Yes.
Fancy.
Has had two careers since she was 18, psychology and entertainment. She's an acclaimed writer, author, psychotherapist, supervisor, expert witness, business consultant. Oh my God, we can go on and on and on. She was a former TV and radio talk show host for her entertainment career. She sold a TV series to Aaron Spelling when she was 22 and was admitted to the Writers Guild of America. She's written and hosted for the Disney Channel, has produced 8 short films, a web series, and again, she'll just tell us more about that instead of us just reading it. And we discovered that she and I both went to the same graduate school.
So cool.
Different locations, different times, but amazing. So
I
we have a
that.
Lot in common. And then we have Siobhan Hill, who came to Children Mending Hearts with empathy tattooed on her heart after serving the inner city schools of Oxnard for over 20 years as an elementary school principal and a high school principal. Oh boy, I bet she could use that headache book.
Yeah.
She has experienced empathy in action. In 2007, she won the Western Regional Principal of the Year and was able to travel all over the U.S. speaking about what made her Oxnard school so special. The one thing that she took away from this experience was the value of arts and education as an integral part of the development of each child. And again, instead of just reading, let's hear from these lovely ladies more about them. Welcome.
We're excited to have
you. We're delighted to be here.
So delighted.
Super excited. Thank you.
Well, you both, between the two of you, have done so much. This is amazing. So for those of our listeners who don't know, can you just tell us what is Children Mending Hearts?
We're a nonprofit here locally in the San Fernando Valley, and we've been together as a family for the last 10 years, serving the students of Los Angeles and being able to help educate and understand how when you bring empathy into the classroom or working with children with empathy, with that concept of what type of behavior that would be expected. So when children are dealing with situations, they're able to talk to them and being able to help them on their journey and hopefully support them and make positive decisions.
As you're talking, I'm thinking, I have no empathy for my children wanting my chocolate. Is that okay? Should I be kicked out? It's okay.
No.
Parents are exempt.
Teach your children empathy for you not wanting them to have
all right, I'm okay with that.
Okay? So it's good.
No, that's a wonderful thing. So how did it get started and how is it funded?
That's great. We started with Lisa Hesloff, who is our foundress, and Grant Hesloff. Basically, she lives here in the San Fernando Valley too, and brought in a wonderful family that was affected by the Katrina hurricane. Mm-hmm. And by opening her doors, her and her family, you know, was able to experience some life-changing stories and events and just to see how that family, what the process was. And so basically that allowed them a chance to kind of look at the world in a different way and go, well, what else could we do? If just opening our door has made this much impact on this family, what else can we do?
Mm-hmm.
And two daughters that they love unconditionally and wonderfully, and you know, it was kind of like, I can do more. And so she started some trips over to Darfur and to the Congo and really understanding what the children need over there.
Mm.
And so that's where the heart of it came about 10 years ago, is really understanding, how do we make the children here in America understand what's going on in Haiti and
mm-hmm.
how the lives of the Haitian children are living? And so she did that through arts. And that's where mm-hmm. it really inspired, because art is in a universal language. You mm-hmm. don't have to have economic or any kind of a barrier. It's all for all and for all to enjoy. So creatively, she started out with something very simple, which was a kite. And so used that as a concept and an art and brought those kites back here to the States. And she used to put on large workshops, and that really, you know, got the kids connected here.
And how did you and Dr. Linda end up meeting? Who wants to tell that story?
Yeah,
I will.
I have a friend named Carol Connors who was in the Teddy Bears, who sang to no him is to love him. And she also wrote the lyrics to an incredible song called Rocky. So Carol invited me to a wonderful premiere, which was Lisa Hezlov's film that she was trying to qualify for Oscar consideration for documentaries, called Served Like a Girl. And Lisa has won a tremendous amount of awards for this film, and it was about women in the military. Mm. The good, the bad, the ugly. Just beautifully done. Great documentary. And during the after party, I was standing there eating vegan hors d'oeuvres. I was in heaven.
Sounds so good.
Yes. And Siobhan came up to me and said, I've just noticed you. Who are you and what do you do? And I took out my showbiz card and I took out my psychotherapist card. And she held them up next to each other and she goes, we've been looking for somebody with your credentials to be on our board of directors.
Mm.
And I said, where do I sign?
Oh, I love
and
that.
She said, come in for an interview. I did. That was September 5th. September 30th, I was unanimously elected to the board. I am and was so honored and thrilled to be on this board of directors because they have a heart mission of trying to make the world a better place. And that's my mission as well as a therapist and in everything I do.
Mm. Even as an entertainer, right? Kelly used to be in acting as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can understand that too.
So we've got a room full of hams.
Right. Pretty much. Exactly.
And you won't be serving us at Easter.
Not if you're kosher and Jewish.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So that's a beautiful message. So who came up with the name Children Mending Hearts?
Our foundress. Again, teaching children what at times kids' hearts are hurting, you know, from loss or less than, et cetera, or just abuse. You know what I mean? If it's verbal abuse that might be happening from a classmate, et cetera. And so her mission was and vision was that we are, have a name that would be able to resonate with kids, and understanding is that we're charging you to help mend other people's hearts.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in a typical classroom, there's 30 students and one teacher. Well, that teacher can only do one at a time. But if you could build an army of empathetic students to understand and to be there as their, you know, to charge them, to be their very best and to help out, that's the ultimate goal. So it's Children Mending Hearts, for teaching children when other children's hearts aren't hurting, how to help them unconditionally.
It's really the Good Samaritan philosophy. Yeah.
And is it like a curriculum that you're going into the classrooms, or how does it work?
Yeah, so it's a three-pronged method. First, we E for educating them. That's what we say. And we go in and we do a workshop.
Okay.
It's kind of like a honey where we take the group as a whole and we look at them and inspire them and excite them and do some activities. And by the time they're leaving, they're looking at themselves going, I can do more.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can do this. And at the same time, a lot of the kids that maybe are the ones that are doing the wrong in the classroom, they can look at it and say, maybe I shouldn't be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize, I like you over here, but I didn't realize when I said that, that hurts.
Wow.
So that gets us going. And then we reach out to you as a teacher and we say, would you be interested in continuing on this mission to teach them every month a different concept?
Oh.
And so that's where the engagement coming. Relevant curriculum with today's topics, to be able to educate them as, look, here's more children dealing with the same issue. This is how they handle it. How could we handle it in a classroom? Always with the ending, culminating ending, which is that of an art project, so that it brings everyone together. Because these are hard topics.
Yes.
When you talk about the kids that were in Flint, Michigan, and the water,
right,
and what happened to those children.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about the kids that are at the border, and what happened. I mean, no matter which way you go with it, there are children here in the United States that, you know, are hurting. And
right.
So we want to make sure is that that could be your classmate that's a migrant, you know, worker, and being part of it. How do you handle it? Because they've been to three classrooms, three different places.
And it's through experiential exercises. And Siobhan does a great job with this. It's like, how many people here ever hurt somebody's feelings and they come forward, or was there a way you could have done it better? So it's insightful as well as a teaching exercise.
We actually have a caller. Yeah. So hold on one second. Let's see. Hi, you're on live with Dr. Deborah and therapist Kelly. Hello.
I have a question for the guest.
Sure. Go ahead.
Hey, question is, what ages of children, what ages of school grade children are most appropriate for this?
K through 12. I mean, what child isn't, whether it's elementary, even nursery school. But we do K through 12 in public and private schools. And I think it doesn't matter what the age is. Everybody needs to learn empathy and compassion.
Yeah, we are looking at the earlier grades from for preschool area. That's our latest journey. We're kind of investigating and seeing how we can take this information and teach it at a real primary basic level so that they are, you know, ready to go to school when they hit, you know, TK and kindergarten level.
And we're also reaching out to teachers and principals all over the country to start programs like this, to have CMH's program in the schools. And it's wonderful. I've seen it in action. I've participated. I'm very, very impressed.
Thank you so much. Do you have another question?
No, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So if any teachers and principals are out there, we would love to hear from you. The website is childrenmendinghearts.org, and you can call the office, and we would love to present a program for you.
So right now, is it just in California, or is it other places nationally?
Correct, here in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And we're really moving towards how to reach it to a bigger level. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to explain, there's one more method to bring it full circle.
Sure.
Because again, studies have shown, you know, anti-bullying programs, et cetera, one way doesn't work. And that's the beauty of it's a three-prong method. We get in front of them, we get them excited to talk about it. They spend the next few months reviewing the different curriculum. And finally, they're charged with a project in their community to see how they can make a difference. So again, you teach them all of these different actions, but then they have to take a look at what's around them. Mm-hmm. Because what's happening here in Sherman Oaks, California, might be completely different than what's happening down in Watts.
Right.
Absolutely. So recognizing, not telling, but recognizing it and charging them to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And we call that through, you know, student SLEs, through student learning expectations. That's where we see the movement. So then from there, the way we can measure it is, what does that child do? What does London do from there? Mm-hmm. What is he going to do? You know what, Mom? I've decided I'm going to go and do this for the animal shelter because I know what it feels like when a child, my friend lost an animal and that made me sad. Wow. And this shelter gives animals a chance to continue on, et cetera. So it just drives them in whatever they're passionate about.
I have a quick question about when you were talking earlier about, you know, exposing children to things that they might not ordinarily be exposed to. And obviously, as a clinician, I worry about overstimulation for a child, overwhelming them. So let's say you have this, you know, seriously middle-class, sheltered child who's never been exposed to any of this. They're in that rat race of competitiveness at school, and all they're thinking about is getting ahead and being on the best sports teams and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, and they never watch the news because their parents keep them from it, and now they're introduced to this kind of content. How do you handle those children who might become overwhelmed by hearing about death in Haiti? Mm. Or, you know, do you start slow and you test out each child's tolerance, or how does that work?
Right, so it is definitely a scaffolding system, and we use it through pictures because we believe pictures tell the best stories. Not a lot of words, just let them soak it in and understand. Like one of the lessons for the newest curriculum is called Empathy Rocks in the USA. When we looked at Houston and we watched how the floods affected, where 1 minute the child was in their bed and then the next minute they're in the convention center. Mm-hmm. This is happening, you know, this is happening here in the States. And so I believe the way we introduce it is light, and then it goes down to heavy, and then so that they can figure out how they, as a group or a unit or individually, want to make an impact. So again, it's about timing. And it's the responsibility of the teacher, too, because he or she knows what they can handle and can't. They have it, and maybe there is a topic that's just a little too close, or we just recently had something happen similar. Maybe we won't address that topic. So it's fluid, you know what I mean? And it can be worked in any fashion as possible.
And so much of the research has shown that if you can gear any topic to the learning developmental stages of a child, they can absorb it. So I've taught nursery school, kindergarten, first grade, all the way up to PhDs. And the way you gear something to a little one is, of course, very different than how you're going to pitch it to a high schooler.
Teenager, sure. Wow. Do you run into that at home now where you have to explain to your kids? Because they are significantly different in age in the sense of you've got a now is it seven?
Remy's nine.
No, but
and London's five. He'll be six.
Why do you want to make him seven? Jeez.
I don't know. Maybe because you're so like, I feel so bad for you. Let him grow up already. Maybe you're like, come on.
I'm skipping years. Anyway, yeah. So that's a developmental difference for sure. Ladies agreed? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you encounter that where you maybe can explain one thing to Remy, but yeah.
You have to like just make it a little bit more layman friendly for London or something like that. Or it's funny when my older son will explain it to my younger son because I love that. It's like, well, Remy, why don't you explain, you know, what you think? And then London seems to get it in a different way, which is nice.
I remember when I often used to take care of both my nieces and my daughter, and between the three of them, there would be an 8-year span.
Uh-huh.
So with Tiffany in the middle. Mm. And so I was adjusting to how I would talk to Tiffany. And then all of a sudden I have to explain to the younger one, Delaney, oh, no, she's not getting that at all. And the older one is rolling her eyes like you know, you have to dumb it down for me.
Right.
You know, it's like, then you sometimes have to have individual conversations them. You can't actually do that always in the same group. Yeah,
exactly. And what you were saying about your children, it's so wonderful for siblings to mentor each other because they know how to talk to each other and they can use language that the other one can understand because they were that age too.
Exactly.
And it provides more bonding and attachment and closeness and family unity and cohesion.
Well, you should have seen them in the back seat. They were like fighting. It was like WWF. So
well, that's who.
Exactly. But I guess that's normal.
Welcome to a family.
Yeah, exactly. So is it the type of thing where you would be in an auditorium doing a presentation, or is it in each individual classroom? That's great. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And a lot of times schools do ask that all third graders come together because, again, a lot of times the environment doesn't happen within the four walls. It happens on the playground where the children, you know, run into different confrontations and able to be. So, again, being able to do that, we leave that up to the school and what they know is best. So we listen. You know, we want, there's no one right formula for the school that I'm looking at across from us or a school, like you said, that's down in Watts. I mean, they're just, every school has its own community and culture, and we want to respect that for the teachers. And that's why that pictorial curriculum where you see it up on the screen, those little higher level questions that are asked, what do you think happened to those animals when the floods happen? Where do you think? But that's driven by that teacher knowing his or her classroom.
So is that a good method to ask a child a question before giving them the information?
Right.
Right. Because I think a lot of people might be just listening saying, well, how do I do that at home? Maybe maybe that's going to happen at our school or et cetera. But what would be a hands-on?
Well, this is why the dinner table is so important and why parents need to not have texting going on at the dinner table. You stop the cell phones, the tablets, etc., and you have an actual conversation. Right. You don't text the person sitting next to you.
No? Really?
Really? What a surprise. Uh-huh. A shock. So what I would recommend is have contemporary issues as conversation at a dinner table. And see what the children are saying and what's happening at school and how they handled the situation. And one of the things I do when I give my parenting classes is when they're trying to teach ethics and values, ask them, how could you have done that differently? Let's look at your different options of how you could have handled that in a way that wouldn't have escalated into an argument.
Right.
Because what parenting and what teachers and principals and therapists are trying to do is incorporate in an individual child a sense of ethics, morals, and good judgment. And when you put the ball in their court to entertain the options of how they could have handled it, that makes the discussion not only more relevant to them, but it gets them thinking of alternative behaviors and different words they could have used to not escalate a situation.
Have you ever encountered a situation where a parent becomes very annoyed and disgruntled by the process, that their child's coming home talking a talk that the parents necessarily don't admire, right? Let's say maybe a child who has a narcissistic parent.
They're laughing. Right?
I mean, I haven't never had any of those people in my office.
This happens, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, for narcissists, there's a great failure of empathy, and that could be seen as weakness, mm-hmm. right? So how would you handle something like that?
Again, we are not the person on the ground for the actual classroom day in, day out. We have parent education programs that they're allowed to come, you know, to and visit and help understand maybe something that's happening or realizing that they have a concern and how they can get the help. So usually the parent interaction for Children Mending Hearts are people that really want some support and guidance, et cetera. But that'd be a great survey question
and
for me if you have any, you know what I mean, for the teachers out there.
And they volunteer. That's the other nice thing, is that they volunteer.
That's nice.
What I have seen when I've accompanied Siobhan on the programs is there are wonderful little video clips, like little vignettes of situations with children in a certain, I wouldn't say perilous situation, but a situation that could have been handled differently. And so the discussion, after they're shown the little videos, that's what makes the difference. It's like, well, I thought that child was feeling sad, or I thought that child was feeling suspicious, not suspicious, you know, a third grader wouldn't use that word, but I thought he was sad, or I thought he was angry, and, you know, how could you have reached out to him to talk about his feelings? So that the discussion that I've seen in the classroom demonstrations are just so poignant. And these kids just learn so much, and they're very forthcoming with their situations that they could have handled differently in the past. And that's part of the issue, is to develop insight and introspection in a child, to develop a conscience, because a lot of kids have parents that don't understand the value of having a conscience.
For sure.
I love that you're doing this, because I think we need this now more than ever, especially because of all the texting and the tech. And I think we lose that empathy because we're not seeing the facial expressions. We're not engaged. So it's such a beautiful thing that you're doing this now. I think we really need it.
Yeah. And kids don't listen when they're texting. They don't hear tone of voice. They don't see body language.
For sure.
They don't see facial expressions. And so many social skills are not being developed because of tech. And I'm a giant fan of tech.
Sure.
And there's a place for it. And there's a place for interaction with human beings.
Right.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Dr. Linda Dure, and that's Linda with a double N.
I love that.
And Siobhan Hill, the founders and board of director from Children Mending Hearts. You know, we're talking a lot about empathy. I think it's very valuable to also dovetail into bullying and prevention of bullying. And boy, is that a problem these days.
I'd like to make a statement about the research about bullying.
Sure.
They have found, and this is a national survey and maybe international too, but the ones I've seen, is that bullying decreases when it's reported to an authority figure, whether it's the school nurse, the playground supervisor, the vice principal, the principal, teachers, etc. When a bully knows that he has been revealed, exposed, told on, that makes more awareness of a bully to not do it again. Now, you can say, oh, well, heavens, you know, how can that be? But that's really what the research shows. So little children, of course, are being bullied by bullies who say, if you tell anybody, you know, I'll hurt your puppy, or I'll get your cat, or, you know, really nasty and vindictive threats.
Right.
And so they brainwash them into silence. And that's why bullies operate by fear and coercion. And that's what's got to be changed.
And what we're trying to build is a support system for the teachers, because, again, a teacher here versus across town might have a brilliant idea. How do you bring those synergies together to help continue to create, come up with creative ideas to support him or her in that classroom? I.e., a great example that she talked about is the reporting, where we create these little cute boxes with the mouth, and there's two colors, you know, or two different, one form, but two different boxes you can fill out. So if you're filling it out, it could be, I caught someone being kind. Or you might want to check on Joe over here because I didn't like how he was talking to Mary. And you put it in there, and then it begins another tool that you've got it off your chest as a child, and then you don't have to worry, is anyone, you know, going to see me do
right,
this, not
that's
do
smart.
It?
Smart.
But then at the same time, I've let someone know that's there, and they can write their name or not. But again, it's another way to support the system, because these teachers here, I mean, are doing amazing. It's a hard job. As I'm heading back, I'm so excited because this is my favorite time of the year. But to make sure we continue to arm them with the best research, the best product, and offer it free to them. That's right. the beauty of Children Mending Hearts is this. We're offering it for them to support them in this journey because it'll be one, hopefully, less thing that they have to worry about at the end of the day, to knowing that everyone is safe.
What about off campus? Because I imagine there's a ton of cyberbullying and online bullying. And how do you deal with that? Is that part of the curriculum?
Yeah, it's those are, again, another up on the board. Let's see what we can move forward. It's part of one of our lessons, just talking about it as part of the assembly. But again, it's just something that we hope to explore in the future more into a more in-depth curriculum. There's a lot of people out there working on that that are experts in the field. But at the same time, we're working on how to report it, how to communicate it, because it becomes a silent death. And we're seeing too many children take their lives over stuff like this, not telling anyone. And that's where I believe sometimes the crisis is someone didn't hear or no one said anything. 4,400 children this year in the United States took their lives under the age of eight.
Wow. Under the age of eight.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, this is where, how do we arm them, our community, with the tools to help, that there is an outlet without being, quote unquote, you know, I'm a tattletale, or they heard me or they didn't hear me. Because a lot of times when people are interviewed after the loss of a child, they had no clue.
Wow.
They didn't know.
Wow, that's just scary.
Because the bullying is so pervasive and coercive to get them to be silent. Right. And when little kids are frightened, they don't tell their parents. They don't tell their siblings. They tell no one. And it just escalates. And at our fundraiser, we had photos of the children who had taken their own lives on the board. And this is also on our website, et cetera. Because people don't think that a little child could take their life.
Right.
Well, they know how to make a noose. They know how to hang themselves or cut themselves with a kitchen knife or something. And the tragedies are just astounding.
Right.
Astounding.
Sadly, in line with what you're saying, which I think is probably why there's such an epidemic in this, is that a lot of parents still downplay bullying as not really a thing. It's like a lot of people I've heard in my practice say, well, you know, he says this is, you know, but he's kind of a wuss, or he's being a baby. This is just part
of
growing
up. Or a snowflake.
Right?
Yeah, they're called snowflakes.
Okay, so this is what children do. This is how they get strong. This is how they, you know, toughen up. And you know what? If you're having a trouble at school, just go slug them. You know, just hit them back.
I've heard that
a lot of that kind of advice. So I could see that this could be a challenge at times for the teachers who are, you know, expressing this, teaching this, educating, et cetera, how to allow a child to, who gets to define what's bullying? Maybe that's really my question. Who really defines what's bullying? Is there an objective definition? Is it how the child experiences it? Is there that it has to be coercion involved? I'd love to.
Could it be all of that?
Yes, or could it only be a part and that still be bullying? So do we have a definition of bullying?
To me, anytime when a child doesn't feel safe anymore,
it's been being bullied.
Something's going on.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? And again, we want to be able to give that child an opportunity to first train them to know how to listen to other kids in their classroom. That might be because they see it.
Yeah.
They know they're not supposed to go anywhere, but to be able to just listen, because sometimes kids just need to be heard.
Of course.
And again, you get in line, and it's one of the exercises we use in the workshop where we've got a teacher and we line 30 kids up and say, who goes first? And what about the person at the end? Who says theirs not more important that needs to be told to the teacher accordingly? So
that's why an anonymous Dropbox in every classroom is a great idea. And may I also say that teachers need to check that every hour, just in case, to nip it in the bud and not let the children go home until all of those slips are read, because something could happen on the way home.
Right.
Children get beat up all the time. I had a friend who grew up in the South Bronx. He had to literally step over dead bodies to walk to school.
Oh, my gosh, from them being attacked, bullied?
Well, you know, drug deals and all the stuff going on. And he's African American, and he got, we call it jacket jacked instead of car jacked. Stole his jacket. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a grown adult now, but, you know, this goes on in all schools. It does not matter socioeconomic levels. It goes on in private schools where the tuition is $50,000 a year, and it goes on with all races, all ethnic groups, all religions, etc.
Yeah, were you ever bullied, Kelly?
Yes. I was thinking about that absolutely, and it's so traumatic. It is so traumatic. You know my whole story. I was actually telling somebody the other day. So when I was in sixth grade, a bunch of boys that were like these popular kids, I was coming out of my French class, and they said, "Hey, Kelly, roses are red, violets are black. Why is your chest as flat as your back?" It was so traumatic. But here's the beautiful thing about this whole thing is that I, like, you know, kind of held it together. I went to my locker. I started crying hysterically. And this other boy who did not participate came over to me and said, "Hey, Kelly, you know, are you okay? I heard what happened." And he gave me a hug and he put on my jacket. And I'll never forget that. And that act of kindness was the nicest thing. And I wrote an ADHD book and put that vignette in there. And I just contacted that boy who's now, you know, my age, 40, and sent him an email and said, "You know, I still think about that in sixth grade." And he's got a daughter now. And I said, "I'd like to send you a copy of the book." And it was just really sweet. So, you know, something beautiful came out of it because I remembered the beautiful act of kindness of this other boy.
But that's what we're doing.
Yes.
Yes.
We're training kids how to recognize things and not be afraid. Don't worry. Just go over and be with them. And even if it's just simple, being right next to them, a touch and knowing I'm
hug,
here. That's what made you.
Words.
You weren't running to the teacher. You were going into your thing.
Yes. I wouldn't have. That's the sad part. I wouldn't even have thought to do that. I was so shamed. You know, it was like, you know, so embarrassed. So
would you go home and tell your mom?
No.
See, that's where that cycle, when does it end? And like I said, training the student, thank goodness he had the insight to do that. But obviously listening to you today, it affected you.
Yes.
You put it in a book.
Mm-hmm.
That's a success.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing?
How do we create the kids, your own children at your home to do the same thing that when they see that happening, they know exactly what to do. You know, kids know how to call 911 all day.
Right.
And they also know how to call 411 and Google and doing this. But what do we do for them at this at these moments?
I had a set of mean girls from middle school. Actually, a few in elementary. But I was homecoming queen. I was cheerleading captain. I was in all honors classes. And I still had mean girls.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how accomplished you may be, no matter how old you are, mean girls operate because they are envious, and it's projection. I mean, we're therapists here, so we understand what projection is, or displacement, or whatever, and they're just vicious, vicious little people.
Right.
And I'd go home and I'd say, "I just want to be their friend, Mom. You know, why don't they want to be my friend?" And she would explain to me that, you know, they were envious, and to just let it go. And I had my own friends and unhook from it and continue on your own path.
Mm-hmm.
And reunions, you know, hello, wave, smile, turn around. Don't even want to talk to them.
You were bullied, right?
As you guys were talking, I was thinking, sometimes I forget how much I was bullied, actually. Mm-hmm. So I was president of the Itty Bitty Titty Committee, just to commiserate with you. That was one that I received a lot.
I love
it. I'll show them now, right?
Right, exactly.
And they're natural.
That's really funny.
But we got to thank menopause for that. But also I was called Horseface and Rabbit and Skinny Bones Jones and a whole bunch of stuff. And my sister actually had a friend who was a little bit older than her who actually used to sit on my knees, and she was much, much, much heavier. So she was a large woman, and they would just torment me and threaten me and say that she'd break my knees if I was to tell on her. And I was terrified. So I tolerated that for years. Years. So I mean, it's tragic. It's, you know, I can laugh about it now because I did in middle school, which was really cool, although it's not cool now in the context of what we're saying. But I had the tough chicks on my side, so they liked me for some reason. So if somebody came and messed with me while I was at school and on campus, somehow I look over my shoulder and there they were, Daria, and I can't remember the other ones.
They protected you.
They were there.
Wow.
They were like my little, nice. My bodyguards.
Yeah, and your like, guardian angel.
Fuck with her, you're fucking with us. People went scattered. I was like, you know, shitting in my pants. What's about the day that they're not here?
Right, exactly.
You know,
what
I that's tough, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But let's take off on that point for a minute, because one of the things that I talk about when I do parenting classes is how children need to be assertive. Mm-hmm. And how taking girls as well as boys to karate class,
yes. mm-hmm.
or swim class, mm-hmm. or weightlifting class, or exercise class, or judo, or jujitsu, or self-defense classes, whatever, yeah. is so important yeah. for children to feel that they can take care of themselves.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely recommend sports for kids. I recommend mm-hmm. self-defense classes. And I've taken 5 self-defense classes.
Wow.
And they were, one was called Dirty Street Fighting. And some were given by the police departments, and some were given by women's centers and mm-hmm. Things like that. I totally recommend parents taking charge of educating their children to be assertive and to take care of themselves in self-defense classes.
That's Absolutely. Great. Now, we've all shared. So, Siobhan, have you?
Oh, olive oil. You know what I mean? I was tall, skinny, and big-eyed, and so it was that olive oil. But it's mm-hmm. hard because it's like, you know, you go through all that, and you're still surprised you came out of it. You know what I mean? And so you these survival skills, like you said, and mm-hmm. what made you drive, or what did you click into? But ironically, your story is that's what we teach kids, to have each other's back. So by the time they're leaving, who's got your back? And they'd go around and like, I got your back, and you've got my back, etc.
Oh, that's great.
So that when it came, you don't need to say anything. Even if you just stand in presence, there is something about one person versus 3 people standing
for sure.
there. We're not
mm-hmm.
encouraging violence. Just to know, I got your back, and I'm listening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing what's going on between you and there and the thing. Mm-hmm. And I know now it's time that, you know what? You don't need to listen. Linda, you don't need to listen to this. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
be able to do it, because it's easier
turn
to
it
turn
around.
With a group
That's
than
right.
it is to turn on your own. So again, those are the small nonverbal strategies that we're using with them through the workshop, and then again the teacher practicing them throughout the 8 months of the school year, with the final outcome is hopefully we're building a kinder community inside that classroom, and that good things come out. And then it's kind of like, I'm sorry, you're not supposed to talk like that to other people in class, that it just becomes the norm.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal.
It's beautiful.
I was running a group yesterday, and I literally reprimanded these young men who decided it was very fine to interrupt this young lady who was sharing some of the details of some of her trauma. Mm. And I'm like, guys, that's rude. How would you feel if somebody, and these mm-hmm. were adults,
mm-hmm.
and one of them looked at me, and this one had the tattoos all over the place, that he goes, you're right. And he completely got serious, and he completely jumped in, because he has a sensitive side. How most bullies have been bullied, right? Most people who are sexual harassers were sexually harassed.
That's right.
Doesn't mean that all those who are victims turn into perpetrators, but most perpetrators
right.
have been victimized on some level.
And a lot of bullies have very violent parents.
Yes.
They grow up watching domestic violence. Mm-hmm. The cops are at the house all the time. They see mom hitting dad, dad hitting mom. Verbal abuse, etc. And so they think that that is the way to handle interactions between
right.
people.
Right.
Sure.
And so it's a terrible role model. And then to try to get the parents to come in on parent conferencing. You know, I've taught in Head Start. I've taught in very affluent communities, and I've taken Medicaid. And it doesn't matter if somebody's making $3 million a year. The violence can be just as horrible
of course,
as
yes.
in, you know, a deprived area.
So since we just have a few minutes left, we do have a few.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I know, and such a meaningful subject. What have we missed that is really important for the audience to take away with?
I think what we'd like to also put out again is that we are recruiting teachers, we are recruiting schools, we're recruiting principals, vice principals
okay.
to call us and have our program in their school and get the support they need for this kind of empathy and compassion building program. And go online, childrenmendinghearts.org, and the phone number
818-940-3577.
What a beautiful organization. Oh, so happy. Thank you for doing all this, really.
Well, we
gift.
Thank Lisa and Grant Hesloff for their vision, their compassion, and putting it into action.
Mm-hmm.
What I love so much about shows like this is that it really draws me deeper into my empathetic soul, because a lot of times I leave my empathetic soul because it hurts so much because I'm around a lot of people who aren't empathetic. Mm-hmm. And then I remember I don't really have to have empathy in return for me to really honor right. that component of myself. So thank you, ladies, for reminding me of the importance of that. And yeah, I fortunately have a grown daughter who is about as empathetic as they come,
yes.
as Kelly, Kelly knows.
Oh, she's the
and
best.
Just such a heart.
I wonder where she learned it from.
Exactly, exactly.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, Deborah.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes it does.
But we have a grant online, like she had mentioned. If you drop down in, for the grant for this year for Empathy Rocks in the USA, if they fill out the grant, it takes about 5 minutes, a real simple, and hopefully then they'll be able to win one of the free programs that we have to offer. We have so many to give out this year. We'd love to get it into as
That's
many
great.
Hands. But the voice of them and the needs, it really helps us prioritize who needs it and where they need it. So based on that story of that little, how
right.
it can help
mm-hmm.
build their culture, we appreciate.
Are there some volunteer opportunities for any fundraisers or things like that
Absolutely.
In your organization?
To be 100% free, is we rely on donors mm-hmm. to not only volunteer, but to give financially to keep us going as a community. But at the same time, they can always call or email us according to our website to volunteer with a workshop inside of an art class or at any of our events. We do 2 events every year, which is called Celebrity Poker Tournament, which is December 9th.
Okay.
And, of course, Empathy Rocks, which is our big Sunday afternoon, fun in the sun kind of day that is just the old style where you're in a beautiful home, a backyard, and just fun kids things that you and the kids would just love.
I'm thinking
face
that.
Painting. Licking it up.
They
do
face
it up.
Painting and all sorts of
wow.
creative
yeah.
things.
Well, the hell with the kids.
she's going to have fun. Exactly.
There were adults who got their face painted. It's like,
why not?
Come
yeah.
on and join us.
But I imagine parents who are right now listening, so they would just contact your website, and then do you then follow up with the school and kind of see if it's an option for the school?
So making the match, that's the key.
Okay.
I always joke, I'm like, matchmaker, make me a match. We want to make sure our program matches your needs and uh-huh. being able to get the right volunteer into that school that it makes sense.
Got it.
And one other thing that I want
sure.
to add is I have been in charge of the internship program.
Mm.
So we are developing coordinating programs with LA schools and colleges, universities and colleges. So we are looking for their intern coordinators to contact me, contact CMH, and we are having intern programs for their students to work with us
mm-hmm.
to go into the schools and help us with the program. So
oh,
it's a
great.
Win-win situation for everybody involved, and the students get credit, academic credit for coming
great.
In. They can get 3 credits, 2 credits, 1 credit, depending on the school, depending on how many hours they put in.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a clinical intern supervisor for 40 years. Love working with students, and so call and
that's great.
Okay.
Let us have it.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you,
wonderful.
LA.
Yay.
Wow.
Children Mending Hearts. Beautiful, beautiful, wonderful organization, and 2 beautiful ladies. Thank you
yes.
for being with us.
Thank
and
you
next
for
week
having
we
us.
Have Dr. David Lay. Or Lee.
I Lay? Think it's Lay.
You think so? Okay. Myth of Sex Addiction. Oh, that's interesting. Dr. David Lay. Sorry.
A pun.
Pun
A secret pun.
Exactly.
Spelled differently.
All right. Love
okay.
y'all. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. Find us on Instagram at @2shrinks, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.